Greetings, it's time for Native Sun, bringing you news of Indian country on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. Discord in the Navajo Nation government, as you may have heard, as covered by the Arizona Mirror, Navajo Nation Council removes A.G. Ethel Branch from post. This was published on the 16th of December and written by Shandine Silversmith. The Navajo Nation Council fired Navajo Nation Attorney General Ethel Branch during a special session held on Monday. The council approved legislative action to remove Branch as the Navajo Nation Attorney General on a vote of 13-6, according to a press release. The measure, known as Legislation 0242-24, was sponsored by Law and Order Committee Chair Eugenia Charles Newton. The bill did not outline the reasons for removing Branch from her post. The bill was placed on a consent agenda during the Navajo Nation Council's special session. It was approved without any discussion on the council floor. The Attorney General is appointed by the Navajo Nation President and confirmed by the Navajo Nation Council. However, according to Title II of the Navajo Nation Code, the Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General shall serve at the pleasure of the Navajo Nation Council. Navajo Nation Deputy Attorney General Heather L. Klaw will serve as Interim Attorney General. Klaw has 18 years of legal experience. Thank you to the kind individuals who believe in fairness, due process, and stability of the Navajo Nation and are fighting to overturn the arbitrary legislation to remove me for doing my job, Branch wrote in a Facebook post on Monday morning. This is the second time Branch, a Lup native and Harvard Law School graduate, served as Attorney General for the Navajo Nation. Her first term, from 2015 until 19, was part of former Navajo Nation President Russell Begay's administration. The removal of Branch comes shortly after she released the preliminary investigation report for the sexual harassment and misconduct allegations made by Navajo Nation Vice President Rochelle Montoya against Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin. After an eight-month investigation, the sexual harassment claims were ruled as not warranted. In a statement from his office, Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin expressed disappointment in the Navajo Nation Council's vote to remove Branch as Attorney General without providing a reason. On the same topic, also by Shandine Silversmith of the AZ Mirror and published on the 17th, Navajo VP Rochelle Montoya wants full report on sexual harassment investigation made public. After the announcement that the preliminary investigation of the sexual harassment allegation she voiced against her boss would require no further investigation, Navajo Nation Vice President Rochelle Montoya said she wants the full report to be released to understand precisely how that conclusion came about. I expect to receive a full copy of the investigation report to come to my own conclusions, Montoya said, because she wants to know what laws from the Navajo Nation guided the investigation and ultimately the decision. I will not rely on the summary of the investigation provided in a press release, she said, adding she did receive an email that the full report would be shared with the public once it was shared with Navajo leadership. However, she doesn't know if she's included in that leadership, even though she is the vice president. She contacted Navajo Nation Attorney General Ethel Branch, who was fired on Monday, and requested the full report, but has not received a response. The eight-month investigation into the sexual harassment claims Montoya made against Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin concluded that the events that occurred did not constitute sexual harassment, and further investigation was not warranted, according to preliminary findings released Monday. Vice President Montoya's recounting of the August 17, 2023 incident does not constitute sexual harassment under policies applicable to either Navajo Nation elected officials or employees covered by the Navajo Nation Personnel Policies Manual, investigators wrote. Further, the facts reported would not constitute a violation of any criminal law of the Navajo Nation. the Navajo Nation Attorney General's office launched an outside investigation into the allegations in April after Montoya voiced her claims of harassment and bullying. Montoya first shared that she'd been dealing with issues within the Navajo Nation's office of the president and vice president during her remarks as part of the Navajo Nation Council spring session on April 15th. During a Facebook Live on April 16th, Montoya followed up her remarks by saying she was sexually harassed and bullied in an incident that occurred in August of 2023, but did not name the alleged perpetrator. In May, Nygren confirmed in a press conference that Montoya was accusing him of acting improperly in a meeting in his office on August 17, 2023. Montoya said the investigation's alleged outcome shows that even high-ranking elected tribal officials' claims of harassment can be dismissed and disregarded. "President Nygren did harass me that day in his office, and he's been harassing me every day since," she added. "He and his staff have created a hostile work environment for everyone to witness." In response to the preliminary investigation results, Nygren said in a press release that the allegations against him were nothing but a disgraceful power grab and an attempt to remove him as president. In an interview with the Arizona Mirror, Montoya said, "That's a laughable claim. She's always made it clear to the president and his staff that she never intends to be president of the Navajo Nation. I was elected to be vice president," she said. "That's the job I said I would do, and that's the job my constituents voted me to do. I've never tried to grab for power or his position," she added. Montoya said she still goes to her office at the Capitol in Window Rock, which is in the same building as the Navajo Nation president's office. However, she's only seen Nygren in passing and has not spoken to him directly since April. In October, Nygren called for Montoya's resignation. She said she never considered resigning because she committed to her vice presidential role when she was sworn into office in 2023. She said she plans to do her best until her term ends. "It hasn't been easy, but I still do my job," Montoya said. That was Navajo VP Montoya wants full report on sexual harassment investigation. From Grist Magazine: Meet the peach that traveled the Trail of Tears, and the elders working to save it. This is by Taylor Dawn Stagner, and it was published on the 20th of November, 2024. It's November, and it's unseasonably warm, as John Brown, a Muskogee elder, works to replant peach saplings. "I haven't had much luck growing them from seed," he says. The reason, he thinks, is because peaches need lower temperatures. Around him, tiny peach trees, the size of pencils, stand above the browning grass underneath their parent tree. Brown harvested around 200 peaches this year from his small orchard, enough for his family and neighbors, but he had competition. A fox has been poking around. "The animals know when the peaches are ripe quicker than I do," Brown laughs. "They start coming in and stealing my peaches." Brown's peaches aren't your everyday peaches, they're heirlooms, direct descendants of peach seeds brought across the continent on the Trail of Tears. Brown calls them Indian peaches. Other Muskogees call them Trail of Tears peaches. There's been little research on this particular variety, and it's unknown just how many genes they share with commercial peaches. While grocery store peaches are soft and fleshy, Indian peaches don't get much bigger than a lemon and are extremely firm but sweet. The Indian peach is threatened by climate change, where hurricanes, flooding, and higher temperatures have massive impacts on crops, including peaches. Around the nation, heirloom varieties like the Indian peach are also threatened. This fruit that crossed a planet, carried by traders and travelers, and eventually by a few Muskogees along the trail before they found a new home outside Sapulpa, Oklahoma, is a connection to another time and place. "One of the greatest gifts Creator gave me is these peaches and the ability to share these trees with our community and everyone," Brown said. There are only 50 Indian peach trees on the Muskogee Reservation that Brown knows of. Some grow in people's backyards, and some at a local daycare. And between climate-driven changes and growing cycles and high temperatures, they face a difficult future. Luckily, they have people like Brown working to protect them. Peach cultivation is thought to have begun around 8,000 years ago in the Yangtze Valley in China. One of the first mentions of peaches in literature appears in the fictional novel Journey to the West, written in 1592, that describes peaches as a fruit that could grant longevity and make a man's age equal to that of heaven and earth, the sun and the moon. From China, peaches made their way to Europe, then to the Americas in the 1600s on Spanish ships, the beginning of a kind of crop exchange between the continents. Potatoes and tomatoes from South and Central America went to Europe, while peaches made their way to the Georgia coast and quickly into indigenous diets. Indigenous people were already caring for and managing forests and other kinds of tree foods, said Jacob Holland Lulowitz at Pennsylvania State University, who studies archaeology and ethnohistory. That would have allowed them to adopt peaches super quickly and know really well how to create healthy peaches. Within a few decades, and with the help of a vast network of trade routes, peaches made their way across the continent as far as the southwest, where tribes like the Navajo sun-dried and stewed them. Around 1780, thousands of peach trees tended by the Seneca and Cayuga tribes along the Finger Lakes in western New York State were destroyed by President George Washington in an attempt to ethnically cleanse indigenous peoples from the region. Washington wrote in a letter to one of his generals that the goal was to lay waste all the settlements. He added, "It will be essential to ruin their crops now in the ground and prevent their planting more." In 1830, President Andrew Jackson signed into law the Indian Removal Act that led to the Trail of Tears, a death march that forced around 60,000 indigenous people to leave their homes and move west across the Mississippi River to Oklahoma. Vernon Courtwright grew up eating Indian peaches. Now 75 years old, the Muskogee elder and veteran says his family brought Indian peach seeds and planted them when they were done walking the trail. "That was the beginning of our life, and the peaches' life in Oklahoma," he said. When he was a child, his grandmother, Emma Bruner, was the one who taught him about how to grow and tend the fruit. "We grew up eating these peaches." Courtwright says in the 1970s he began to see Indian peaches disappear, which, with each passing year, there was less on the landscape. "I just knew that our orchard had to be taken care of," he said. When his grandparents passed, he took on the work of caring for the trees, and eventually met John Brown, who helped cultivate seeds and saplings to give out to other Muskogees. "It's our legacy," said Courtwright. "It's my family's legacy to the tribe." Georgia, the peach state, produces nearly 25,000 tons of peaches every year, but falls far behind California, which produces nearly 475,000 tons each year. Globally, nearly 24 million tons of peaches are grown each year, with most coming from China. Climate change is having a big impact on those numbers, though. One of the biggest threats to the peach industry is rising temperatures. Peaches need peach chill, a certain amount of time and temperatures that are under 45 degrees Fahrenheit. Without adequate peach chill, peach trees won't produce, and with rising temperatures, blooms will sprout too early. In 2017, around 70% of peach losses could be attributed to lack of peach chill. "Lack of chill is something we think is going to be the biggest issue for us in our industry," said Dario Chavez, a peach geneticist at the University of Georgia. "If you're in a northern climate, you don't worry too much about the chill, but I think they're starting to see the physiological responses to issues with the chill." Then there are extreme weather events, supercharged by climate change, that inflict immediate widespread damage. This year, Hurricane Helene killed at least 226 people. It also devastated Georgia's agricultural economy to the tune of nearly $6.5 billion. But Helene's path was only the beginning. Hurricanes bring flooding, which is especially bad for peaches. Peach trees don't like to be too wet and can prematurely drop fruit if underwater. They're also susceptible to diseases like brown rot, which can be triggered after heavy storms. For the Indian peach, peach chill and extreme weather aren't as big a threat as they are in the South. However, Oklahoma is expected to become 2.5 degrees hotter in the next 20 years. Even though the peach is a resilient plant, peach chill will become an issue. Natural disasters like floods become more of a threat to the lives and livelihoods of tribal members. The tribal lands in Oklahoma are the most prone to flooding in the state. But to protect Indian peaches, and a little part of tribal history, John Brown has been giving out saplings for the better part of a decade to anyone interested in growing them. Brown regularly travels to Georgia and Alabama to visit the proposed Okmulgee Mounds National Park and Preserve, located on Muskogee homelands. On his drives, he often passes peach orchards filled with the variety most Americans are used to. "You don't think they would be able to produce peaches," he says, as he eyes the tightly pruned rows. "They cut 'em back real small." He goes down to the homelands to remind settlers in the area that the Muskogee survived despite the United States' attempt at genocide, and demos making canoes and bows the traditional way out of local wood during the annual Okmulgee Indigenous Celebration. To Brown, the peaches are a symbol of resilience. "When our ancestors brought these peaches up from the South, you think about how devastating it was to lose loved ones and not know if the seeds will sprout," he said. "I do this to honor them and their strength." That was the article, "The Peach That Traveled the Trail of Tears." You're listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been bringing the disabled audio access to print information for 45 years. Learn how to support us or listen to our live streams at sunsounds.org, where you can also find individual episodes on demand. You can also listen to us with the Sun Sounds app, available for both iPhone and Android devices. Native American patients are sent to collections for debts the government owes. This is by Catherine Houghton, H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N, and Ariel Zients of KFF Health News, published the 16th of December, 2024. Tesha Hawley learned that hospital bills from her son's birth had been sent to debt collectors only when she checked her credit score while attending a home buying class. The new mom's plans to buy a house stalled. Hawley said she didn't owe those thousands of dollars in debts. The federal government did. Hawley, a citizen of the Gravant tribe, lives on the Fort Belknap Indian Reservation in Montana. The Indian Health Service is a federal agency that provides free health care to Native Americans, but its services are limited by a chronic shortage of funding and staff. Hawley's local Indian Health Service hospital wasn't equipped to deliver babies, but she said staff there agreed the agency would pay for her care at a privately owned hospital more than an hour away. That arrangement came through the Purchased Referred Care Program, which pays for services Native Americans can't get through an agency-funded clinic or hospital. Federal law stresses that patients approved for the program aren't responsible for any of the costs. But tribal leaders, health officials, and a new federal report say patients are routinely billed anyway as a result of backlogs or mistakes from the Indian Health Service, financial middlemen, hospitals, and clinics. The financial consequences for patients can last years. Those sent to collections can face damaged credit scores, which can prevent them from securing loans or require them to pay higher interest rates. The December report by the Federal Consumer Financial Protection Bureau found these long-standing problems contribute to people in Native American majority communities being nearly twice as likely to have medical debt in collections compared with the national average, and their amount of medical debt is significantly higher. The report found the program is often late to pay bills. In some cases, hospitals or collection agencies hound tribal citizens for more money after bills are paid. Holly's son was born in 2003. She had to wait another year to buy a home, as she struggled to pay off the debt. It took 7 years for it to drop from her credit report. "I don't think a person ever recovers from debt," Holly said. Holly, a cancer survivor, must still navigate the referral program. In 2024 alone, she received two notices from clinics about overdue bills. Frank Whiteclay, chairman of the Crow Tribe in Montana, testified about the impact of wrongful billing during a U.S. House committee hearing in April. He shared stories of veterans rejected for home loans, elders whose Social Security benefits were reduced, and students denied college loans and federal aid. "Some of the most vulnerable people are being harassed daily by debt collectors," Whiteclay said. "No one is immune from the risk," a high-ranking Indian Health Service official learned during her job's background check that her credit report contained referred care debt, the federal report found. Native Americans face disproportionately high rates of poverty and disease, which researchers link to limited access to health care and the ongoing impact of racist federal policies. Whiteclay is among many who say problems with the referred care program are an example of the U.S. government violating treaties that promise to provide for the health and welfare of tribes in return for their land. The chairman's testimony came during a hearing on the Purchased and Referred Care Improvement Act, which would require the Indian Health Service to create a reimbursement process for patients who were wrongfully billed. Committee members approved the bill in November and sent it for consideration by the full House. A second federal bill, the Protecting Native Americans Credit Act, would prevent debt like Holly's from affecting patients' credit scores. The bipartisan bill hadn't had a hearing by mid-December. The exact number of people wrongfully billed isn't clear, but the Indian Health Service has acknowledged it has work to do. The agency is developing a dashboard to help workers track referrals and to speed up bill processing, spokesperson Brenda White said. It's also trying to hire more referred care staff to address vacancy rates of more than 30%. Officials say problems with the program also stem from outside health providers that don't follow the rules. Melanie Agoran, an assistant secretary at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, said at the hearing that the proposed legislation doesn't include consequences for bad actors, health facilities that repeatedly bill patients when they shouldn't. "The lack of enforcement is definitely a challenge," she said. But tribal leaders warned that penalties could backfire. Whiteclay told lawmakers that some clinics already refuse to see patients if the Indian Health Service hasn't paid for their previous appointments. He's worried the threat of penalties would lead to more refusals. "If that happens," Whiteclay said, "Crow tribal members who already travel hours to access specialty treatment would have to go even farther." The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau report found clinics are already refusing to see any referred care patients due to the program's payment problems. The Bureau and the Indian Health Service also recently published a letter urging health care providers and debt collectors not to hold patients accountable for program-approved care. White, the Indian Health Service spokesperson, said the agency recently updated the referred care forms sent to outside hospitals and clinics to include billing instructions and to stress that patients aren't liable for any out-of-pocket costs. And he said the staff can help patients get reimbursed if they've already paid for services that were supposed to be covered. Joe Bryant, an Indian Health Service official who oversees efforts to improve the referral program, said patients can ask credit bureaus to remove debt from reports if the agency should have covered their bills. Leaders with the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation in Washington State helped shape the proposed legislation after their citizens were repeatedly harmed by wrongful billing. Tribal Chairman Jared Michael Erickson said problems began in 2017 when a regional Indian Health Service office took over the referred care program from local staff. "It created a domino effect of negative outcomes," Erickson wrote in a letter to Congress. He said some tribal members whose finances were damaged stopped using the Indian Health Service. Others avoided health care altogether. Responsibility for the Colville Reservation program transferred back to local staff in 2022. Staffers found the billing process hadn't been completed for thousands of cases, worth an estimated $24 million in medical care, Erickson told lawmakers. Workers are making progress on the backlog, and they've explained the rules to outside hospitals and clinics, Erickson said. But he said there are still cases of wrongful billing, such as a tribal member who was sent to collections after receiving a $17,000 bill for chemotherapy the agency was supposed to pay for. Erickson said the tribe is in the process of taking over its healthcare facilities instead of having the Indian Health Service run them. He and others who work in Native American health said tribally managed units, which are still funded by the federal agency, tend to have fewer problems with their referred care programs. For example, they have more oversight over staff and flexibility to create their own payment tracking systems. But some Native Americans oppose tribal management because they feel it releases the federal government from its obligations. Beyond wrongful billing, access to the referred care program is limited because of underfunding from Congress. The $1 billion budget this year is $9 billion short of the need, according to a committee report by tribal health and government leaders. Donald Warney, a physician and member of the Oglala Sioux tribe in South Dakota, called the proposed legislation a band-aid. He said the ultimate solution is for Congress to fully fund the Indian Health Service, which would reduce the need for the referred care program. Back in Montana, Holly said she braces for a fight each time she gets a bill the referral program was supposed to cover. "I've learned not to trust the process," Holly said. That article was Native American Patients Sent to Collections for Debts the Government Owes. You've been listening to Native Sun, the show for Indigenous issues on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. Music is Indomitable by DJ Shub.